Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is a phrase I've heard a lot in 2017. It's hard to listen to the news. Between natural disasters and political development, good stuff hasn't made headlines very often. This hour, we're going to focus on positive stories, acts of kindness, and connection. First, when Emily Zirkel was in eighth grade at Panorama Middle School, she was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. She responded well to treatment, and during her illness, she had a wish granted by the Make-A-Wish Foundation. Now she's strong, 31 years old. She lives in Des Moines and volunteers for the Make-A-Wish Foundation. So when she saw history repeating itself, an eighth grader from her hometown diagnosed with cancer, this time she got to be the one to grant a wish. Emma Reinhardt is the wish recipient. Last year, she was diagnosed with acute lymphoblastic leukemia. She recently learned that her wish to go to Italy has been granted. Emma Reinhardt is with me now. And first, Emma, I know cancer treatment has been a long and difficult journey. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling really good. In November, I had a short hospital stay for bone marrow suppression, but now I'm back to normal and feeling great.
Oh, that's so good to hear. And you're back at school?
Yes.
So tell me how you learned that your wish to go to Italy was granted.
Well, I was actually in the hospital in November with the bone marrow suppression, and it was the one-year anniversary of me being diagnosed. And my mom and dad and cousin and brothers were in the hospital room, and they brought up balloons and a card. And in the card, it was like kind of like a little poem saying like all the words I'll need to know and like just explaining that my wish got granted.
Wow. So what did that feel like? I mean, it was obviously a hard week being in the hospital, but how did you feel when you found out the wish was granted?
I was very happy because it was gearing towards the end of the hospital stay. And so that plus getting my wish granted was just overall very happy and exciting.
Absolutely. Well, when you look forward to that trip to Italy, what are you most excited about doing?
I'm really, really excited to go to Rome and like see the Colosseum. And I'm really excited to get to take pictures.
Oh, that sounds like a wonderful trip to take. And do you spend a lot of time thinking about that trip these days?
Yeah, kids at school often ask me about it and like everything I'm going to do. And we talk about it quite a lot. And like, I try to plan like the schedule and what it's going to look like and what food I'm going to eat and what I'm going to buy when I'm there, just little things.
What are you most excited about eating?
The pasta. That was one of the factors of why I chose Italy, because I've always been obsessed about all kinds of pasta. I like to have spaghetti like 3 times a month.
Oh, that's very exciting. And what do you think it means to you after all the treatments that you had to go through and all those different times you had to go to the hospital? What does it mean to have something like this to plan for and to dream about?
It's like a light at the end of the tunnel of all this. So even if 10 things go wrong within the next 10 months, I know that I have one very, very big and exciting thing to look forward to.
You get to take your family with you on this trip. Does it kind of feel like you're giving them a gift, something for them as well?
It really does, because I wanted to do something that would be fun for my whole family. And so, like, I didn't want to just do, like, a shopping spree where it was just mostly for myself. And then they would be sitting in the corner saying, oh, I'm so happy for you. I wanted something that they could get out of my experience and something that our whole family would really enjoy and get to tell their kids and their friends about.
So is this something you talk a lot about at home right now?
Me and my brother always joke about. He is a very, very big Oklahoma City Thunder fan. And he is ecstatic to go to Italy. But he's like, you know, Emma, you should have just, like, taken me down to Oklahoma City to meet all those players and we could have stayed. And I'm like, no. But he is very excited, and he says he talks a lot about it with his friends, and he brags a lot. So,
well, that is very nice. I think you made the right choice. I mentioned Emily Zirkle earlier, someone who went through something very similar to what you've gone through back when she was at Panorama Middle School. And she's not somebody that you knew before this wish. What was it like when you met her?
At first, when she came to our house for the Make-A-Wish interview, I didn't even realize that she had had cancer before. And then when she left, my mom told her a little bit of her story. And that just, like, kind of blew my mind that we have really similar stories and she gets to grant my wish.
Yeah, so that's really cool. So looking at her now, she's 31 years old and this cancer journey is way behind her. Although I know that this is something that shapes you for the rest of your life. When you look at her, how does that make you feel?
It gives me very high hopes for myself because I already have big plans for my future, but you'll never know, like, if those will actually turn out that way or anything. And I look at Emily, and she's, like you said, 31. She had this in eighth grade, and she's done a lot with her life.
Do you think that someday, along with your big plans for your future, do you think that someday you might want to volunteer to help kids that are going through something like you're going through?
I definitely think I will. Like, this has shaped me into, like, just a completely different person in the 1 year that I've had it. And it shaped me into the better person. And I really think that I will do a lot of volunteering with other kids.
Emma, thank you so much for talking with me today.
No problem.
And I hope your trip to Italy is just the best thing ever.
Thank you.
Emma Reinhardt is an eighth grader at Panorama Middle School. She'll be going to Italy in September with her family, thanks to the Make-A-Wish Foundation. Now, it doesn't take a lot of effort to wave at someone, but the simple act of waving has warmed many hearts and made waves in the world of college football. All last season, Hawkeye football fans in Kinnick Stadium have taken a moment right after the first quarter to wave at the Children's Hospital next door. We've asked Kathy Jo Whiteside, Senior Certified Child Life Specialist at the University of Iowa, to talk with us about the Kinnick wave. Hi, Kathy.
Hello. How are you today?
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being here. And I think that the story of how this got started is almost as remarkable as the wave itself. Tell me how this idea began.
Well, we had heard here at the hospital that a fan had actually come up with an idea that it would be really neat for the Kinnick Stadium fans to wave at the kids when we have our gatherings up in the press box that we have here at the hospital. And so we'd heard about it, and we anticipated that some people would maybe be waving, and we had the kids up in the press box that day of the first home football game. What we didn't really expect was that at the end of the first quarter there would be people waving before the announcer even announced it. We didn't even know that it would be announced, and then it was just all the fans waving up to the kids. And it was just, it was a really special moment, and it became more and more special all throughout the season.
So first, tell me what it's like. This is on the 12th floor of the Children's Hospital?
Yes, on level 12, we have what we call the press box, and it's a very large room that has a TV, and we have a lot of different games in there. We have, we live stream the football game right into the room as well. And so we have different teams from the university Hawkeye athletic teams that come and help us, and we play games and we have snacks. And so it's really like a tailgate event that we have up in that area.
And I know that there are some very, very ill children at the hospital. Who comes? I mean, it can take a lot of effort to move a child out of their bed or out of their room.
Yes, it's all the children that are mobile that can leave their rooms do get invited to come up to the press box, and so we really encourage the kids to come up, and the only children that aren't allowed to come up would be kids that are in isolation, but they also are able to, to watch the game in their room, and then we are able to take some of our events that we do up there to them in their rooms.
And you talked about live streaming the game so that the kids can watch it on a screen, but they can also go to the window. They can see the whole stadium laid out below them, right?
Yes, yes. And as the season wore on, a lot of our kids wanted poster board. They wanted to be able to put signs up in the windows. They wanted to make wave hands that they could wave to the fans that were in Kinnick Stadium. So it was really, it just became a really wonderful event and means a lot to all of the kids and a lot to the families.
How do the kids react when the fans start waving? What did they do?
You know, when I've been up there and I've witnessed it, it's been very emotional. We've had one child who just said something to the effect of, "I had no idea that all these people liked me." We had somebody who said that they couldn't wait to be on the other side to be able to then wave back at the kids after that patient had been in the hospital, and for the parents, it's been a really it's also a really emotional time for them to see that, even though they're going through a really, really hard time, they're here in the hospital with their child, and then to see that complete strangers are cheering them on that way, it's really very, very powerful.
Well, Kathy, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Kathy Jo Whiteside is Senior Certified Child Life Specialist at the University of Iowa. We were talking about the Kinnick Wave. Coming up, a lifetime of lessons in kindness from a father to a son, a life-saving act of kindness from a brother to a sister, and a small act of generosity that grew by leaps and bounds. That's coming up in a moment. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're sharing stories of kindness. And Matt Arnold of Iowa City has had a lifelong role model when it came to learning to be kind. His dad. And he's still learning lessons from his dad, even as they prepare to say goodbye. Hi, Matt.
Hi.
Thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Your dad's name is Dennis Arnold.
Yep.
Tell me just a little bit about him.
He's a retired fire captain from the Rockford Fire Department. Started off college, he was going to be a science teacher. But he's a little bit introverted and realized during student teaching that it would feel emotionally safer to run into burning buildings than it would teach high school students. So made a career in the fire department. Also wallpapered on the side, taught me how to paint and wallpaper as well. So skills that I don't use professionally but have used around the house.
So when you found out that we were doing a show about acts of kindness, your dad came to your mind immediately. Why?
Right. A few weeks back in mid-November, my dad was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and given about 8 weeks. The prognosis is about 8 weeks. So, but what came to mind was more kind of the grace that he's dealing with this and how grateful he is for the opportunity to say goodbye and thank you to people.
Can you give me an example? I mean, that's incredibly difficult news to receive about yourself and about any loved one. Tell me how he's been reacting.
He is just really excited about people coming to visit the house. Also, I think one thing was also just when he broke the news to me. He wanted to tell me before he told my younger brother, and then my younger brother was at the house. But when he was then telling my brother the news, he looked at me and said, "Pardon me if you've heard this one before." So as if it was all a dark joke, but maintaining his sense of humor and really just enjoying time with folks. And yeah, sorry, it's hard to pick one,
right.
One spot.
Well, but. And he and your mom have been married, did you say 47 years?
Yeah, yeah.
47 years.
Yep.
And he's also, with this time he has left, taking the opportunity to take care of his wife.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Dad never talked much about what he saw on the fire department. When I was a kid, it was just a busy night or a quiet night. But he did share with me now. He's unfortunately seen the ways a lot of people have left this world. And so he also considers himself lucky on that front. And so he said a heart attack would probably be the quickest, easiest way to go. But he said you couldn't get things in order or say goodbye. So he's actually really appreciative. And some of the things he's done for my mom is like just getting the furnace serviced, getting snow removal set up, getting yard service set up for the spring. So just trying to make sure that he has everything to go. It's almost as if he's just like packing for a long vacation, but he's getting everything in order. And again, no complaints, and just kind of checking in on making sure everything's kind of neat and orderly as he goes.
So still taking care of his family.
Yep.
You told me about a time that you feel really explains what kind of guy your dad is. And this is a hockey story.
Yes. Yeah. So my dad was born in Chicago and a lifelong Blackhawks fan. And that's one of the things that carried through to my brother and I is that we're huge fans of the NHL and the Blackhawks. A few years ago, my dad won a contest. It was a drawing, but it was put on by the Illinois Lottery. And the prize was a trip for two to travel with the Blackhawks on their team jet from Chicago to a road game, stay at their hotel, hang out with the team during their morning skate, go to the game, and actually go in a luxury box, and then return home with the team. And
a dream trip.
Absolutely. For any type of hockey fan, just kind of a dream sports trip, but especially, you know, as a Blackhawks fan, getting to travel with the team. And my dad, having two sons that were also Blackhawk fans, said he couldn't decide between which son, so kind of took this trip of a lifetime and just gifted it to my brother and I. And my dad, being who he is, his simple request was just take some pictures and have a good time. So he just wanted to hear how it went when we got back. And so I think that encapsulates his kind of personality and disposition.
You're a dad.
Yes.
No. You've got an 11-year-old and an 8-year-old?
That's right. Yep. Malcolm and Fiona.
So as a father yourself, are there things that you do that you think, I got this directly from my dad?
More kind of trying to be a better father, mostly also like trying to figure things out with giving kids more a sense of kind of grit and determination, because my dad, as an individual, he would always figure if there was something broken, he would fix it. And if he didn't know how, I mean, a lot of what I learned on how to do research was just dad showing me how to go look things up back when you'd have to go to library or read up. But that's one thing with the kids. Another thing now is, especially these past few weeks, it's really reframed for me just how to be kind and gentle, that you can still be a guiding paternal force, but you can do it with a lot of quiet grace. And that's a lot of my dad.
You clearly have a lot of gratitude that you have this opportunity.
Absolutely.
To say goodbye to your dad, too. What have you told him? What do you need him to know?
This is all interesting. Things that I've told him is, you know, how much I love him, how much he's meant to me, how much his strength, especially now, is just inspirational. So that was kind of difficult to share. One of the really interesting things that might sound a little dark for folks was my dad has a playlist that he wants kind of at his funeral celebration, right? That will be put with a slideshow. So I've been digitizing photos, scanning those, and probably put about 300 together for a montage and put music to it that he requested. And the last time I went home to visit, watched it with him, and he said he was just really happy to see it. So it's that kind of thing. Again, taking this opportunity rather than being reminded on why this will be shown. Just really excited that he had the opportunity. So that's
to
been
relive
just
a lot of memories.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
And you're getting ready to spend your last Christmas together.
Yeah, that part is hard just thinking of it that way, but also just in that spirit of gratitude, taking a step back for a second, the Dr. Seuss quote, don't cry because it's over, smile because it happened, is kind of a theme for our family during the holidays. And so, yeah, we're getting ready. My wife and I are doing as much prep, like packing the meals for the days that we'll be there so that my mom and dad don't have to spend time cooking or cleaning and just will be able to spend more time playing with their grandkids. So that's kind of our approach. Yeah, it's been kind of sobering thinking about this as a last Christmas because you just go your entire life, right? And your parents are always there for Christmas.
Right.
And it's almost more, how are we going to fit this Christmas visit in with this Christmas, managing multiple families? But a lot of clarity comes with the final Christmas. So that's been kind of the hard part, just thinking about that. So,
well, Matt, I hope it's a really special time together.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk a little bit about my dad.
Matt Arnold of Iowa City talking about his dad, Dennis Arnold of Rockford, Illinois. Next, a life-saving act of kindness. 3 years ago, Sarah Henderzak's kidneys were functioning at just 7% of their capacity. She needed a kidney transplant or dialysis treatments to stay alive. Then her big brother, Dan Beck of Hills, decided to give her one of his kidneys. Both Dan and Sarah are with me now. And Sarah, you were diagnosed with polycystic kidney disease when you were only 17 years old, but you didn't actually start experiencing symptoms until you were in your 40s. What was it like knowing that you had a serious disease that would affect you like this eventually?
I knew someday that I might have to have a kidney transplant. And then in my late 40s, I started getting the symptoms. And I remember getting off the plane from Aruba and opening my mail. And I saw my creatinine level, and I knew. I did not feel good on my trip. I just knew. And I knew it was the beginning of a new beginning.
And at first, one of your other siblings, you guys have a pretty big family, right? Seven of you all together?
Yes.
All right. So one of your other siblings, a sister, wanted to give you a kidney, but that didn't work out, right?
No. She had a full physical. It was a three-day full physical. And at the very end, they did a sonogram, and her kidney was not perfect.
Dan, you and Sarah obviously are siblings and a big family. How many years apart are the two of you?
Well, almost 10 years, I think.
So there's a pretty big gulf age-wise between the two of you. As you were growing up, I mean, how much contact did you have with each other? What was your relationship like?
I was in third grade when he went to college. And I remember looking forward to when he was coming home because I was the only one that would play chess with him because he always took so long. And he doesn't remember that, but I beat him once in my life. We need to have a game. But, I did not know him that well. I mean, I would see him at Christmas, and he was older. I was in college.
Dan, while Sarah was going through this and hoping to get a kidney from one of your other sisters, you were going through an extremely difficult time in your life as well. Your wife had been sick, and she was on dialysis due to complications from diabetes.
Yeah, she found out she was diabetic after our third child, and so she was on insulin, and then her kidneys started to fail, and she had to go on dialysis three times a week. And I took her, and dialysis is not fun. And sometimes she felt good after dialysis, and other times she didn't feel so good. And that was a rough period in my life.
Yeah,
definitely.
And she eventually passed away during the same period, before you donated your kidney to Sarah. Would a kidney transplant have saved her?
Yeah, it would have, although because of her health, They decided it was too risky. So, you know, slowly her kidneys got worse and worse, and at a point in time, it quit functioning, and she passed away. And that happened in June, and then the kidney transplant took place in December. So 6 months after she passed away is when the transplant took place.
Wow. So after losing your wife, you decided that you would do this for your sister. Was it because of what you'd experienced with your wife that made you want to take this chance?
Yes. A combination of reasons. For one thing, you know, I saw what Jane had to go through, and I did not want, you know, I thought nobody needed, I hated to see anybody go through that, you know, and especially my sister. You know, I'm the oldest of seven. You know, she's the second from the youngest. You know, you're supposed to take care of your younger brothers and sisters, and I saw this as a way to help take care of Sarah.
When Dan said that he would give you one of his kidneys, what was your response, Sarah?
I remember my husband and I at the kitchen table, and we got his email, and we both started crying because we were surprised. Not because he wasn't generous, because he had just lost Jane. He really wasn't. It was a joyful surprise. Yeah. I mean, we were very, very grateful. And I knew that Dan's health was excellent, and I knew it was going to be a good kidney.
Well, and Dan, you are a runner. This is a big part of your identity. And at that point, I think you'd run, 19 marathons?
Yes, I believe that's correct. Yeah.
So I can imagine that for someone who running is really, really important to, the idea of giving somebody a kidney might seem even scarier because there had to be a chance that could end your running career. Did that enter your mind?
Yes, it did. Yeah, it did. But I went online and did some research and, found out that people that with only one kidney, you know, lead normal lives. But back to the running part, Sarah originally wanted to wait until after Christmas for the transplant to take place, but I looked at my marathon schedule, and if I was going to be able to train for St. Louis Marathon in April that I normally run every year, I decided I needed to have the transplant done before Christmas so I'd have enough time to train for St. Louis.
Nice. So your marathon schedule actually dictated the surgery schedule.
It's all
right.
About Dan.
Exactly.
So the surgery took place in December, just before the holidays. And Sarah, what's it like to receive a kidney? How quickly did that change your health and how you were feeling?
It was unbelievable. I remember waking up the next day. We had the surgery on Tuesday. Waking up Wednesday, I did not have this fatigue because I was chronically fatigued. No matter how much I slept, I woke up the same way. It was like having the flu every day. And I woke up and it's like, wow. And they, at 5:30 in the morning, they woke me up and we went for a walk.
I remember being in the hospital in Jacksonville and coming out of the operating room, going to the recovery room. It just so happened that Sarah and I were being transferred about the same time. So I was able to see Sarah from my bed. I could see her on her bed. And I remember what she looked like before surgery. She was kind of gray in color. I remember after the surgery, she was pink.
Wow.
It was a completely different color. And you could see, it's probably maybe too graphic, but you could see the urine, you know, in the bag hanging on her bed. And, it was good urine.
Well, thank you both for talking with me today.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Yep, thank you.
Brother and sister Dan Beck and Sarah Henderzak. After Dan gave Sarah one of his kidneys, she also got the chance to make one of his dreams come true. She took him on a trip to Rome where he got to run the Rome Marathon. We have another story coming up in a moment, but I also want to read this letter from Susan Taylor. She says, last Sunday, I was given the kindest gift I've ever received, a pink miniature Christmas tree with pink ornaments and lights. In addition to the Christmas ornaments, there were approximately 16 gift cards to a variety of local restaurants. I'm fighting against breast cancer. 2 months ago, I had a bilateral mastectomy with reconstructive surgery. I learned, due to a tumor found in lymph nodes, that I'd require further treatment in the form of chemotherapy. This tree was given to me by my friend Christy Rouse. She fought her battle against breast cancer about a year and a half ago. It had been given to her by dear friends, all donating gift cards too. She's been an inspiration since day one because of how far she has come. I feel deeply grateful and appreciative. The true spirit of Christmas is alive and well around us. Sincerely, Susan Taylor. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. 2017 has been a tough year for Melissa Lawrence of Des Moines. But when she became aware of a friend in need, she found the time, strength, and resources to help in a big way. And she is with us to tell her story today. Hello, Melissa.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
And in a way, this really started with your daughter, who's in eighth grade. She asked you to pick up a friend of hers. Can you tell me what happened?
Yep. She has a friend who they were going to all hang out in a group, and he happens to live closer to where I work than where we live. She asked if I would pick him up on the way home from work one day so that he could hang out with them because his mom was at work and he didn't have a ride. So that's what I did.
All right. So you picked up this young man, and because you're in a car together, you're chatting with each other. What did you find out?
Well, they had just moved into a new apartment, and I knew that they had moved. So I was just asking how that was going, and he was telling me, you know, it was great and much nicer place than they had lived before. And I said something about a Christmas tree, or did they have their Christmas tree up yet, because it was after Thanksgiving. And he said, no, we don't have a Christmas tree. When we left, you know, our old place, we had to kind of leave in somewhat of a hurry. We left a lot of stuff behind. So I said, well, I have two Christmas trees. If you wanted one, you could just have one. And it kind of went from there. He said he would love to. So, and I should check with his mom. So I reached out to her and asked if she wanted a Christmas tree. So that's how it kind of started.
All right. And what did she say when you asked if they wanted a Christmas tree?
She said, yeah, that'd be great. You know, I don't have the money to get one right now. I'm trying to focus on stuff for the house and this and that. It would be awesome if you had an extra one.
All right. So you decided to give them your Christmas tree and you went to drop it off. And what did you find?
Yep. Dropped it off, and they had moved to a really nice apartment. And when I went in, carried the Christmas tree in, and I noticed that the apartment was pretty empty. There was food, there was the little things, there was the table and chairs, but not much furniture in the living room, and no beds in the boys' bedroom. I noticed there's three boys. And there was, in the bedroom, three throw pillows on the floor and three fleece blankets.
You learned a little bit about the family's history. And the situation that they had left was a really bad situation. What did you find out?
Situation was bad. They moved here from another city. And there's a pretty good chance. In fact, I think it's probably 100% chance now that these boys won't ever see their dad again outside of a prison. So the mom is, you know, dealing with trying to start over in a safer environment for them, but also dealing with the sort of aftermath that happens when a parent is removed from your life.
Right. So once you went to the apartment and you saw how little they had, you decided that you could do something to help. What did you do?
I went home that night, and, you know, I've been in a place before where people had to help me out, so I know how it feels, and I always try to pay it forward every year. I've been lucky to have awesome people in my life, and so the thing I couldn't get over that night was the boys not having beds. I guess everything else to me seemed okay and livable, but I just couldn't, you know, get that image of the blankets on the floor out of my head. So we have a secret Facebook group here at my work where all of my coworkers and we all chat together about things. And so I made a post that night and I just said, you know, I could probably afford to buy them all beds. I could probably afford to buy some furniture, but I can't afford to do all of it. I can't afford to buy, you know, all the beds, all the stuff that goes along with it. So I said, I know a lot of us use Craigslist or Facebook to sell old furniture. So my ask is, if you decide you're getting rid of anything before you post it, would you consider selling it to me? And then maybe I could buy them some things.
And how did people respond?
So what happened was I started getting messages from all my people, which I wasn't expecting, but I should have. I work with some amazing people, and I should have known what would happen, but I really didn't. So one man reached out to me and said, you know, hey, he actually just started working here for us, and he said, you know, I'm single, I'm young, I just got out of the military, I have some payout bonus from that, and I need the boys to have beds. So I just got online and I ordered 3 twin size beds. And I was instantly overcome with gratitude, but then I was also a little worried because this was not what I was expecting and I wasn't exactly sure how I was going to tell the mom that I was providing all of this for her. So then more emails, more messages came in. One of my guys offered me a futon and a recliner for nothing. Didn't want anything for it. One of my guys asked about gifts for the boys. Did they have gifts? Did they not? And showed up the next day with a large amount, gift card to Target. And it just kept going from there. So...
Wow. And you went to Target to buy bedding for those brand new beds. And
yep.
Even the woman at Target wanted to help you out, who checked you out. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So I went to Target and I decided I didn't buy anything myself because once the messages came in, I thought, well, I will wait and see what I don't get and then I will buy that. So I went to Target and I know that the boys all share a room. So I thought, well, I'll just get, you know, 3 sets of sheets, 3 comforters, 3 pillows, and we'll go from there. So my cart was way full when I got to check out, and the woman said, oh, you know, hopefully somebody's going to have a good Christmas. Are you redoing a bedroom? And I said, actually, I'm, you know, buying these for somebody else. I'm going to give them as a gift. And she said, oh, my gosh, that's great. Is it, you know, are you donating them? And I said, well, it's just we're helping out, you know, a family and this and that. And she said, you are. Well, tell me more about it. So I started talking to her about it, and she was really moved. And she said, you know, like a lot of us, she said, I've been in that situation. I was in a bad domestic situation, never as bad as that, and not with kids, but I know what it feels like. And we were almost done checking out, and she said, are you done shopping for them? And I said, well, I did ask for a list of gifts that the boys would want. So the mom's working on getting me that. So I do have to do that. And she said, okay. And she said, just a minute. She called her manager. The manager came over and she said, I need to run to the back for a minute. Can you finish checking her out? And the manager said, sure. And we went about our business and checked me out. And she came back up as I was walking out and she said, hey, I went back. Today's payday. And I want to help you out too. So I want to help buy gifts for the boys. Here you go. And she handed me $200.
Wow.
So, yeah, I I said, you know, give me your name and your phone number and I will text you a picture of the stuff I buy. I don't want you to think I'm just going to put it in my pocket or anything. And she said, nope, I trust you. It sounds, you know, great. And I just want to be able to help somebody out this season. So it's nice to, you know that I'm know that I'm helping out someone.
So
she handed her money over.
So you talked a little bit about the mother of this family. You said she's a very positive person. She's working very hard. She never asked for help. How did you tell her about this?
I called her the next week. I called her right away after the beds because I felt like the beds was a huge thing. You know, I thought she would have been fine accepting some smaller stuff, but I wasn't sure how she was going to react to the beds. And so I called her and I said, hey, I need to talk to you. And she said, okay. And I said, you know, I am from the area. I've worked in several places where I've been involved with the community. So I know a lot of people. I have a lot of connections. And I want to help you out. You know, they want to help you out this Christmas. And so we have beds coming for the boys. And I think that she maybe didn't understand or wasn't quite sure what I meant. And she said, what are you talking about? And I said, I have three twin size, you know, mattress box springs coming for the boys for their bedroom. She was pretty quiet. She started crying. And she was just really grateful. I mean, she said, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. And I said, well, really all we want is you to take them, you know, take the beds, let the boys have them, be excited. And we just want to help you out. And she said to me once after that, she said, you know, I have kind of thought, she said, not that anything is bad right now, but she said, I've kind of thought, you know, I've started over and 2018 is going to be my year. And where I really am happy and everybody's happy and healthy. And she said, you know, you guys are just helping even make that more so, propel me into the new year with all of this. So she has been nothing but thankful, nothing but grateful. When I asked her to get a list of things from the boys that they wanted for Christmas, she didn't want to. She said, we'd done enough and this and that. And I just finally said, look, these people want to buy gifts, so I would rather buy what they want and not just go to Target or somewhere and buy a bunch of stuff they don't want. So if I can get a list, that would be better. So she did finally get a list from the boys.
What was it like? Were you there when the beds were delivered? And, you know, I know you bought the bedding and there was all that furniture. Did you get to see the boys react to that?
Yeah, so we have a big truck here at work, and we ended up with enough furniture that we needed something more than just a pickup truck. We needed a cube truck or something. So I had my logistics guys load up one of the cube trucks, and we went over there together one day to deliver the beds. I did it when the older boys were at school, just because I didn't want them to feel weird about getting, you know, a new bed. Yeah. I didn't want them to feel like a charity case or anything like that. But the four-year-old was home, and we came and started unloading stuff, and he was so cute, and he was dancing around, and I said, we brought beds for you, and he said, I know, my mom told me this is the best day of my life, and he was super excited, and he was just super thankful and you know, and the cute four-year-old way. But that night, she texted me and she said, the boys were so excited when they got home and there were beds here. They didn't wait to rearrange anything or do anything. They put the beds together themselves and they're all, you know, excited. And she sent me a picture of the three of them in their three beds, all smiling and snuggled in. And but it was really awesome.
Wow. So all of the people who participated in this, except for you, all of the people said that they wanted to be anonymous. They didn't want the family to know who they were.
Right.
Why do you think that was important?
I think it was important. I don't know. I sort of feel that way myself. It's not about recognition. It's just about helping a family out. And that is so how my people are. And I wanted to acknowledge them all and say, man, you know, so-and-so did this, but I get it because I don't want anyone to do that really for me. I had to kind of think twice before I agreed to do the interview.
Right.
But it is a good way to say, you know, a little thing, you know, can help somebody out, but also, you know, if you start something, you never know where it's going to go. It could snowball into something amazing. And I think that, for me, I try to help somebody out every year, but it was really awesome this year to do it with a family that I know, that I trust, that I know will do something good. And that's what she said to me the other day. She said, you know, I have no idea what Christmas next year is going to look like, but I promise you I am going to help somebody out. Even if it's just something little, even if I can't do much, I am going to pay it forward in 2018.
For me,
that's all I really care about.
Yeah. I know this year you've had a lot of challenges in your life this year. Your dad has been sick. Your husband has a new job where he's away a lot, and just some tough things. How did it feel to be able to help someone else in this way, even when you're going through challenges yourself?
Well, I think it puts things into perspective. You know, all the things that are going on with me sort of rolled up into this. I was really feeling sorry for myself. You know, I was thinking, man, let's just get fall over with. I've had enough. All these things keep happening. And then I walk into, you know, yeah, my husband got a new job. Not a new job, a new shift at his job where he's gone. But he's working, and we have, you know, everything we need, and we do still see each other a couple days a week, things like that. My dad is, you know, has been diagnosed with prostate cancer, but he is having surgery, and the outlook is good. You know, so it's definitely walking into a house where the boys don't have beds, no toy box, no nothing like that. Puts into perspective for me that maybe I need to relax a little bit and, you know, not be so uptight about those other things that are going on.
Well, Melissa, thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Sure, of course.
Melissa Lawrence of Des Moines. Talk of Iowa is produced by Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Lindsay Moon, Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Charity Nebbe, wishing you a very happy holiday season. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Ring them bells, ye heathen, from the city that dreams. Ring them bells from the sanctuaries, across the valleys and streams. For deep in the world on its side, and time is running backwards, and so is the bride. Ring them bells, St. Peter, where the four winds blow.